You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Yes, hello, welcome along to the tennis podcast here at William Hill. We're looking ahead to the French Open, which gets underway this weekend. And as always, great stuff to look forward to at Roland Garros. My name is Mark Walton. I'm joined by a couple of people from the trading department here at William Hill. First of all, Drew Young, who is our pre-match tennis compiler. How are you, Drew?
Very well, thanks.
Good man, looking forward to the tournament.
Absolutely, yeah. It's always good to see a Grand Slam.
It always is. And we've got Andrew Watson in with us as well, or Andy Watson as he prefers. He's the in-play tennis compiler here at William Hill. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Mike. Yep, I'm really looking forward to Roland Garros. That's always a busy time for us in play. Lots of people in doing the matches, but always exciting, as Drew says, to do a Grand Slam.
Yes, we're going to have a look at the betting for both the men's and women's side of things. And we're going to start with the women's side. Normally, when I've done podcasts in the past, we tend to get sucked into the men's draw first because we usually have the big four. You know, you have Nadal, Djokovic, Federer and Murray at times and stuff like that. This year, it's kind of a one-man show, but the women's is absolutely wide open. I mean, the women's side of things, you could easily pick from 20 players in the betting there and have a decent chance, couldn't you?
Yeah, it's a 128-woman show, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, last year, I could have probably picked 14, not got the winner. You know, so if that happens again, great.
6-1 the field. We've got 6-1 joint favourites at the moment. 6-1 for Svitolina and Halep. Sharapova is 11-1. 12-1 for Serena Williams. Muguruza is 14s with Ostapenko. Kvitova is also 14s. Piskova is 16-1. Kasatkina, or something along those lines, is 20-1. I knew I was going to trip up somewhere in there. And 20-1 are bigger prices for the rest of them as well. We'll come to you first, Drew, because you're doing the pre-match stuff. Svitolina and Halep, 6-1 joints at the moment. What made them towards the top end of the market? Because when I looked, I think about a week ago, those two weren't at the front end of the market, I don't think.
Well, they contested the final in Rome, which I usually think is the best warm-up tournament. It's the one nearest the event. Svitolina won it, as she did last year, and it looks to me as if she's coming into the tournament in the best form. There's a lot of players there you could actually suggest were probably slightly priced on historical factors.
Yeah.
Like Sharapova, Williams, even Muguruza, who's done next to nothing this year on clay, although I think she's played slightly better than her results have suggested. Ostapenko hasn't played brilliantly, so she's probably slightly shorter than she should be. Kvitova won Madrid, but we were talking just earlier, we're not entirely sure that Madrid's a great guide to Paris. So I just think that the front two in the market are playing best. Halep's my particular favourite. I just think she's a great player to watch. She never looks unbalanced. Clay's her best surface. She did take a bit of a beating off Svitolina in the final last year, but they played last year. Svitolina should have won it, but Halep crept through. I just think they're the two best players in form. There's nothing more to add, really.
Okay. How did you come to the decision to have Sharapova at around about 11-1? Obviously, she's had one or two problems in the past, you know, being controversial in the past as well. But on her best form, we know she's good enough to win this tournament. So
absolutely.
Is she a difficult one to price up?
She is. She used to describe herself as a cow on ice when she was playing on clay. But I think over time, you know, it's the fact that it's a slower surface. She's not the quickest. It gives her more time to get to the ball. When she won it, last time she won it, she dug herself out of so many three-set matches. She played well in Madrid, played well in Rome. You know, she's been there and done it. You can never, you know, sort of throw that away. She's got this experience. She's done it before. When it comes to, like, Svitolina hasn't, it comes down to a semi-final or a final or a bit later round match. She's done it. Others haven't, and that's you can't underestimate that.
One player that's definitely done it in the past and we haven't seen for a while is Serena Williams. Going to talk to you about this, Andy, because yeah. I suppose in the first few matches and first rounds, you'd be looking at her thinking, how quickly do we need to shorten and draw in her matches and stuff like that? She's been out for a long time, obviously having a child and everything. She's down to 453rd in the world. I don't think anybody's world ranking has ever not matched their ability quite so much. Interesting to see her back.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, she seems to have taken more interest in the royal wedding than training for Roland Garros. But she's always been the type, and she's done this for the last 10 years, around Venus, actually, of not seeming to do much in the regular season, if you like, and just turn up for these big events and still turn up and doing the business. But she didn't do it at the Aussie Open. She didn't do it at Indian Wells or Miami. She I understand why she's 12-1 because she's the best player, I think, that we've ever seen in the women's game. So you can't completely rule her out. And like you say, once she starts playing and she turns up and she starts hitting those serves and the forehands, and if she starts blowing people off the court in the first couple of rounds, then that price is not going to hang around for long. And like you say, in play, we'll be shortening her and shortening her, and that serve price will be getting shorter and shorter. She'll be like 7 on to hold serve, you never know. And then, you know, she's got a massive chance if she can start playing.
Yeah.
But not for me, though, for this tournament. Okay. I don't think I want to see a bit more from her before I have a bet at any price on Serena at the moment.
Yeah. She issued a rather ominous warning to her rival, saying she's coming back to win. So maybe we'll see.
It's the right attitude, at least.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, very good. Okay, so we mentioned probably the first four in the betting there. Beyond those, let's talk about a few others. Any that you had on your shortlist there, Andy, that you wanted to mention for us?
I want to mention Kiki Bertens, not because I think she's value anymore, but because of just the stats that she's managed to accrue over the clay court season. I was doing some digging around last night in the numbers, and she's got an incredible hold break percentage. So she holds serve in the last 12 months on clay 78.5% of the time. And she breaks their opponent's serves 46% of the time. So she's winning 124% of the games. That doesn't really make sense, but she's winning 124% games overall. And that's only second to Simona Halep, just behind Simona Halep. So she's got incredible clay court game. And she comes as close as they can be, really, to a women's like clay court specialist. She doesn't show that much on other surfaces. So she's a really interesting player. I'm not sure that 20-1 is the value anymore, because she's never really... She made it to the semi-finals of Roland Garros 2 years ago, but other than that, she's not shown anything in Grand Slams. So although she's got incredible stats and she could play up to a really good level and get through to those later rounds, she's definitely one to watch. Not one that I'll be backing, though. Okay. 20s.
I just want to come back to did you say 124%? So she wins more games than she plays.
I know, yeah.
How do you come to that?
So it's just a cumulative total. So she wins, she holds serve 78.5% of the time.
Yeah.
That she serves, and she breaks her opponent's serve 46% of the time.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
So cumulatively, if you're winning over 100 on that score, then you're obviously winning more games than you're losing.
Yeah.
So basically the long and short of it is she wins a lot of games on clay, on serve, and also breaking serve.
That's the point, isn't it? It's breaking serve that she's very good at as well. Okay, so I like that angle in there. Any others at big prices or any outsiders that you'd want to throw at us, Drew?
I couldn't disagree with Kiki Bertens as a clay court specialist. I've did a bit of digging about it as well, did a bit of listening to other opinions on it, and from what I hear is she's a perfect clay court player. She slides, and at the end of the slide she hits the ball, so everything's timed perfect, she's back in place, whereas somebody like Sharapova, even now, she'll hit the ball then slide and get back into place, so everything she does seems to be about timing, everything's perfect. It's like Halep, she just seems perfectly balanced on the clay. I like a couple other players slightly further down. I like the Latvian Anastasia Sevastova, or Sevastova, as I believe she's pronounced. She's just a steady away player. Hmm. She got to the later stages of the US Open last year, lost, I think, in a third set tiebreak to Sloane Stephens, who then won it. She's got through a few rounds and a few Grand Slams. She's quite a kind early draw. And she's one of these players that I wouldn't be surprised if I saw her at maybe 25-1 at the start of the second week, 20-1 from a beginning price of 66. Players like the top of the list, like Pliskova, Kvitova, the weather forecast isn't brilliant for the first week, so if the conditions get heavy, I think these women will struggle. Yeah. I spoke to Andy briefly about it earlier. I think Azarenka will struggle if the weather gets heavy. It's similar to Serena Williams. She's not had an awful lot of match practice for slightly different reasons. When it gets wet and horrible in Paris, some of these players who don't particularly like the clay, how much are they going to dig in? Do they get a bit annoyed by it? Do they think of Wimbledon in the hard court season after that? You know, Andy says Serena Williams is going to adopt a watching brief for her. I'd take more from Wimbledon out of this tournament perhaps than Paris. So there's a few players down there. There's Suarez Navarro, 66. She's an absolute you know, clay court specialist. I'd be looking to oppose Joanna Conta wherever I could, because she's in rank awful clay court form and seems to really struggle with the patience aspect of it. But I'd be looking at the 50, 66 players who have shown aptitude on clay before, rather than maybe the marquee players who perhaps might struggle on the clay, if particularly if the weather gets bad.
Certainly would have worked out with Ostapenko last year. What price did she go off last year?
She must have been three figures at least, yeah. You know. And she's shown nothing before then, so there's no, you know, I'm sure when the lads sat here this time last year, I'm sure I'd be astonished if they mentioned her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I just throw a couple of things in there about what Drew just said? I went through the draw earlier and I actually had Sevastova and Suarez Navarro contesting a quarterfinal in the bottom end of the draw. They've got Kvitova's in there and Wozniacki's in there, but I could see both of them falling possibly a bit earlier than that. So one of those could be quite a good quarter bet. If we looked at those prices. Also, I'd just like to say Pliskova and Sharapova are on a collision course to meet, I think it's third round or fourth round. It's quite early on in the tournament, and so that'll be an interesting early round match to get, and that probably maybe factors into Pliskova's price, who I think is actually quite big at 16s, just because she's reached the semi-final at the French Open before. She actually does quite well there, even though her game doesn't seem to be necessarily suited by it, but she could hit quite well through the clay court, and we've seen with Ostapenko and with Muguruza last couple of years that just because you've got you say maybe more of a hard court game, you're hitting the ball hard, you're not necessarily the quickest mover on the court, but you can play those ground strokes as well as they can. Two people with big games there winning at Roland Garros, so it can be done with a game such as Pliskova's. So I just wanted to highlight her. If she gets past Sharapova, I could see her having a really good tilt at winning it.
Yeah, we've got some players in there that I must profess that I wouldn't know the clay form inside out necessarily. But there's players in there that, you know, that I've got big names that you'd see playing well at other tournaments. So you've got Venus Williams, if she was to bounce back, she's 80-1. You've got Sarah Rani at 200-1. Players like that, you know, that are big prices coming into this. Is there any like almost star names of the past that we could throw forward as well?
Well, there is Venus, but she's not really shown a great deal this year. Last year, she played very well in the run-up to the French Open and during the French Open. She's not seemingly done much this year. Sarah Rani, I think she's got a decent chance of winning the first round against Elise Cornet, but other than that, I think she can be hit off the court. If somebody takes a good day, yeah, like Andy says, and just hits, she could be hit, you know, she could be hit off the court by a harder-hitting player. It's, you know, there's players, you know, players like Laura Siegemann, clay court specialist, Tamir Bakšinskyj, clay court specialist, both coming back for injury. Probably too big a price if they're fit.
Yeah.
So the prices reflect the fact that they've not played that much tennis this year.
Did you give any consideration to Svetlana Kuznetsova?
It's her first round against...
Yeah, she's
you
got
know,
a really tough first round.
It's that first round. I think she's got... Is it Muguruza in the first round, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, whoever, if she takes over Muguruza's seeding, then she gets through. But she's got the same problem as Bakšinskyj, Siegemann. She's not played much this year. It's whether she's got seven matches in her. You know, when you're coming back from injury, it's... To me, you know, when you watch Federer when he's at Wimbledon at his best, he seems to sail through the tournament without breaking sweat, not getting injured. And then you see so many other players, some of whom we'll probably talk about in the men's, they get to the second week and they're completely gassing.
Yeah.
You know, they're out of breath. So, you know, it's about managing the tournament as well.
Sam Stosur.
I wouldn't put MD off Samantha Stosur with her form. A couple of years ago, I think she got to the semis last year. The weather was dreadful there.
Yeah.
So she, her topspin, the courts got slowed. I mean, the topspin flies all over the place. I wouldn't put MD off her at all.
Yeah, I've had four people down as clay court specialists, and she's in one of mine. You mentioned Laura Siegemann as well. I backed her at hundreds a few weeks ago, thinking, oh, that price will come tumbling in. Oh, no. So there you go. That's
true.
That's maybe my pre-match knowledge showing up there. Maybe I should be more sticking to in play. But she's a really good clay court player. She's got good movement for the clay court. So Laura Siegemann's another one. And yeah, we've mentioned already Kiki Bertens is a proper clay court specialist. So yeah, that's thrown a few there, haven't we? Bigger press.
A few darts, yeah.
let's summarise then, if you like. We'll tidy up the women's and then we'll move on to the men's. If I were to give you maybe, let's say two each, so one towards the top end of the market and a bigger price one that you'd have on your radar, you can go first, Drew.
Well, as I said, I do like Simona Halep as a player.
Yep.
I think she'll get through to at least well through the second week. couldn't put MD off her. I do like Sevastova. And if I was to throw one sort of three-price figure dart, I do like Siniakova to beat Azarenka in the first round. She's again another clay court player. Perhaps I'm overstressing the clay court side of things, but the weather does look as if it's going to be dubious the first week, so I'm looking more at the specialists than the sort of big hitters.
Yeah, okay. And Andy?
Actually, I think this is the time for Svitolina to win it. I've been through a draw. I think she's got a good draw as long as Serena doesn't turn up and wow everybody. So that is my short price one. I can't get any shorter than Svitolina, but I do think that she's got the best chance of them all to win it. If I was to throw a dart at a massive price, then I would look at Samantha Stosur at 150s, just because of course and distance. If I was to throw a horse racing analogy in there, it is really difficult to find the winner of Roland Garros as Yelena Ostapenko showed last year. So it is worth scattering those if you want to throw a few darts around at bigger prices. But if you can only have one at the short price, and that for me is Svitolina.
We did say the same thing in the Australian Open, and it ended up in the final being contested by first and second seed. So, yeah. You know.
Sometimes it works to fall.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's the women's then, and as we mentioned before, we started looking at that wide open this year. It looks a very interesting renewal of the women's side of things. The men's, on paper, looks pretty much a lot more straightforward. We'll go through the betting in a moment or two, but we have to start by just mentioning Rafa Nadal. We know he's brilliant on clay. We know he's now back to the world number one, and to keep coming back at his age, you know, he's coming towards the back end of his career, and to get back to the top of the tree, he's just phenomenal, isn't he, with all the injuries he's had. I mean, Andy, you can go first here. It wouldn't be bad to be half the man that Rafa Nadal is, I suppose, in tennis terms.
No, I know. Well, you run out of things to say. I feel sorry for the commentators who are always having to come up with new superlatives for this guy. And I don't think I've ever seen as short a price as this for a Grand Slam. I don't know if there's ever been one. And you can see why it's his backyard, isn't it? It's basically his house, and people are coming in there and trying to take his mantle away from him. And, you know, he's won it 10 times. He's going for undecima this time. And the way that he's prepared for this tournament is almost unparalleled as well. He's won, you know, he's not won every tournament he's been in, but his clay court numbers are just off the charts. And no one gets anywhere near him on the numbers, in the form, in course and distance form. It's you really do run yourself in circles trying to think of a way to beat him. And
yeah,
well, we'll see what Drew thinks, but it's a real struggle for me to find anything to oppose him with.
Yeah, I mean, pricing it up pre-match, you'd want to go short on him every time, wouldn't you? But you also need to try and remain somewhere near competitive. How do you price up Nadal at the moment? Because you'd want to go 100-1 on in some cases, wouldn't you?
It's very rarely he's anything less than one to double figures these days. I don't mean it in the truest sense of boring, but you see Nadal in the draw, you just think he's won. Madrid was always going to be the struggle for him because he's you know, he does tend to struggle there sometimes. At Rome, he won again. What can you say about him? He's just absolutely fantastic. He manages his schedule so much better now. He doesn't play as much off the clay to keep himself ready for the clay. He's seen off Federer. He doesn't play anymore. Djokovic is clearly not at his best. Murray's not there. Wawrinka's injured. I like I said about Federer winning Wimbledon, he seems to just manage the clay brilliantly. And he's got, you know, I'm sure we'll mention it, but he's got a perfect draw.
I mentioned Kiki Bertens' numbers a little bit fudged earlier, but if I just go to Rafa's numbers, these are my favourite stats of his at the moment. The last 12 months, he's held serve 89% of the time, but he's broken his opponents more than they've held. Like, he's broken his opponents 52% of the time in the last 12 months.
Wow!
So he's not played a tie break in the 12 months. That's because he's just beaten people out of sight. So that's probably my favourite stat about him. I just don't think we should. I don't think we should take it for granted what we're seeing with him. And it's one of those, you don't see ability like this and domination like this very often. It does make it a little bit of a boring spectacle sometimes, maybe, if you're not into, you know, hero worshipping Nadal, and I'm personally not. We've got a couple of lads in the in-play team who absolutely adore the lad. I'm not one of those, but I do appreciate that we don't see this very often, and we should appreciate him whilst around.
Yeah, I'd go along with that, yeah, because he won't be around much longer, will he? He's getting towards the end of his career, and you just kind of sometimes have to sit back and go, wow, this guy is special. He's 2-5 to win the tournament, by the way. Zverev is 7-1 second, and Dominic Thiem is 10-1, a man who's actually beaten Nadal recently. Djokovic is 10-1, David Goffin 40-1 with Juan Martín Del Potro. Kei Nishikori is also 40 with Marin Cilic, and 50-1 are bigger prices for the others. Just want to add one more thing to the Rafa Nadal loving that we're having there. 17 wins on clay since April and one loss. Aside from that loss to Dominic Thiem, he's only dropped two sets in that time, just two, and that's the exact same record he had coming into the tournament last year when he went on to win a 10th
without dropping a set.
Yeah, exactly. So it's ominous. As I've used the word ominous again, I suppose, but it's kind of like it's happening again kind of thing, and it's
it's happening again.
Yeah. So I suppose we've got to try and find a way to take Nadal on, haven't we, because we can't be putting up a 2-5 favourite in a pre-tournament market. I suppose I want to get your thoughts on Zverev, because he's got a huge reputation, hasn't he, as the next big thing in tennis. I don't think he's quite lived up to that reputation. You can see the potential there. Is this the tournament when he really steps forward and people go, actually, yeah, he's quite good?
It should be, but I'm unconvinced about him as a Grand Slam player.
Okay.
You know, I think he is fulfilling his potential in the Masters when you're playing maybe 5 or 6 best of 3 matches, but he seems to struggle with the following up best of 5s. He's a fabulous player. Should have won Rome. Probably would have won Rome if it hadn't rained. But, you know, Nadal come back and just, I think, won virtually every point after the rain break. He's a fabulous player. I'm not surprised he's second favourite. I think we were 8s yesterday. We had to cut him because he's on the opposite side of the draw from Nadal. So you're seeing some people thinking, well, a free dart at making the final. To talk to the punters, I would say if you're going to win each way bet, you should be looking at the bottom half of the draw. That's where if you can find somebody from the bottom half of the draw, that's the way to go.
Yeah,
I cannot see anybody in the first half, top half, troubling Nadal whatsoever.
So can you narrow it down for us, either of you players on that side of the draw that you'd be looking at in the outright market?
The opposite half of the draw.
Yeah, opposite to Nadal. We'll leave Nadal's side alone.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Novak Djokovic. I think he's a great player. He played really, really well in the first set against Nadal in Rome. He looked back to his best. If they could have nicked the first set on the tiebreak, it would have been a very interesting match. But then when Nadal got the tiebreak, the momentum started going. He's the only player I know currently that can take Nadal on in clay. As one of the French journalists calls me, he just sometimes switches into PlayStation mode and just keeps on battering the ball back. Was it the quarterfinal 2 or 3 years ago against Nadal? He gave Nadal an absolute beating on clay when Nadal was, big favourite to win again. Other than that, problem is I'm not sure Djokovic will get that far.
Yeah.
If he gets to play Nadal, I can see it being tight, or tighter than many players would give Nadal a match, but Djokovic, he's playing brilliant. One game, he's terrible. The next game, he's just not good at consistency yet.
It's funny to say that about Djokovic, isn't it? Because go back to maybe 3 years, he looked invincible, didn't he?
Yeah.
That consistency, it turned up at every tournament, every major, every Grand Slam, and you just thought that you can't beat this man. As a result of his inconsistency recently, you're getting 10-1, which also looks, if you'd said to me 2 years ago, you're going to get 10-1 about Djokovic pre-tournament, I'd have laughed at you, probably.
It's been really interesting trading Djokovic in the last 2 months since he's starting coming back into a little bit of form, because no one seems to know. It must be difficult for pre-match to price, because no one seems to know. Like, he seems to be incrementally getting better, and then he'll have a setback. But it's been really interesting in play, because he's shorter than his form would suggest, but he's still not as short as what he possibly should be on his ability.
Yeah.
So, like I say, the price that you're getting there reflects that. You look at his head-to-head record against near enough everybody, and it's brilliant. So, if you're looking in that bottom half of the draw, he should maybe play Verdasco in the fourth round, and then the quarterfinals he'd have possibly David Goffin, which I can anywhere near his best, he should be able to get through Goffin, and then he plays the winner of, hopefully, if the seedings work out, Dominic Thiem or Alexander Zverev, which is Zverev's first test, and that's what we were saying, wasn't it? He should maybe walk it to the quarterfinals, although he's never done that before in a Grand Slam. So why he should turn up now and walk it, I'm not quite certain of his mental capabilities, but that's going to be the area then where you've got to concentrate if you're looking to take on. If you're looking in that half of the draw, and it's half the odds for the final, so each way you're getting 10-1 Djokovic, 10-1 team, 7-1 Zverev. You are going to get a return if you pick the right one out of those. That's true about Kei Nishikori. He's 40-1. He's another one who's coming into maybe a bit more form than he's been showing. He had a long layoff through his injury. He's always been a little bit frail as well. He has been to a Grand Slam final, but what do you make of his chances this week?
I think he's a brilliant clay courter, actually, funnily enough. I think it's his best surface. He's given Nadal some right frights on clay over the years. But Djokovic has beaten him twice in the last couple of weeks on clay. I struggle to see him lasting seven matches on clay. At some point, he'll have the trainer on and he'll, you know, it's just, seems to happen every week.
Yeah, and he's in a kind of poor position in the draw. He would have to beat teams Zverev and Djokovic to get through to the final, which is probably why he's 40-1 in comparison to the 10s for Djokovic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, team keeps cropping up in these equations, doesn't he? And he's a man that's beaten Nadal a couple of times, thinking on clay. At 10-1, is he worth playing, do you think?
He's playing today. This is what I don't understand about Dominic Thiem.
Yeah.
He's scheduling. I know he's a young man still. I think he is probably the second best clay courter in the draw. But why is he playing today? And it's rain affected. He might be like out there for 3 or 4 hours. You know, someone, please, Dominic, if you're listening, just get in touch.
He's a big listener to the Willing Hill Tennis Podcast.
Explain to us what your thinking is behind that. Putting in my head in his head, he wants to maximise the clay court season because he knows it's his best surface. He wants to get as much ranking points and as much money in his pocket as possible. But when he looks back over his career when he's 35, and if he's not won over Roland Garros, and, you know, that's what you look back on, your Grand Slams, not the amount of, you know, acreage in your back garden. So, you know, he is a good player, and like I say, he's the one that's taken on Rafa Nadal recently and beaten him, so he should be second favourite, and he's not because, well, he's an idiot. Is that right? I don't know. Is that too far? I think I might have gone too far there.
I'm not sure he's an idiot. I'm sure he's got a lovely garden. His scheduling is bizarre. Last year, I think you've got to pick X amount of tournaments to get your ranking, and once even the tournaments he discards would get him highly ranked. You know, if last year he played the French Open, then he played in Turkey, then he played, I think, either Queen's Club or Hall, and then he played Wimbledon. It's just, I don't know who his advisors are, but he shouldn't be playing as many tournaments. He shouldn't be playing this week. He should be at Roland Garros just now, practicing, resting up for, you know, potentially seven five set matches. If he plays Nadal, he played Nadal last year, I think, and Nadal absolutely wiped the floor with him over the five or three sets, as it was. That's the key to beat Nadal. You've got to get in there early, take him on, do what Söderling did in 2009. You know, don't give him a chance. The problem is over five sets. I think TM is too much of a clay courter. And Nadal just does it better over five sets.
Yeah, he needs to do what Stan did.
Yeah, just, you've got to blast Nadal off the court, which is easier said than done because not many have done it.
Yeah, Stan Wawrinka.
Yeah,
he's 50-1, isn't he? Could he come into it this year round, or is he out of form, or
he's
not played much?
Yeah, he's the one who's coming back from injury. I seem to say that about a lot of these men's players, but that has been the problem with the ATP Tour in the last 2 years. Really, a lot of people, the best players, just not fit enough, and he's the one that's coming back most recently, and his results since he's come back have been really poor. He's losing to players he shouldn't be, who aren't really fit to tie his shoelaces. So, you know, I can see why he's still up there in the betting. What is he, 10th favourite, 10th most likely to win? He's not going to win it, I don't think, this year, but I really hope he comes back to his best, because he's probably up there as one of my top three favourite players to watch on any surface. The way he just hits that forehand and the backhand, he is. That final against Djokovic, wasn't it 3 years ago, he was sensational.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see him get back to his best, but he's actually quite a big price to win his first round match against he's playing someone not that great.
He's played Guillermo Garcia Lopez, who I think has beat him in the first round here before,
exactly,
a few years back. So who's one of these sort of dangerous Spanish floaters that could, you know, just have a good day on clay and beat anybody. other players like Wrinkers, one Martin Del Potro got injured in Rome last week. No idea what kind of state he's in. Marin Cilic played very well at Rome.
Yeah.
He's not got a brilliant record on clay. Kyle Edmund, I think, obviously the value, much like we said about Kiki Bertens on the women's side, Kyle Edmund is a fantastic clay court player. He's got a big serve, massive forehand. Gave Nadal a really hard game in one of the, I think it was Monte Carlo last year. I think he's clay strangely enough for a British player seems to be his strongest surface.
Could be a good quarterback, couldn't
he? I just think you look at it and you think, what's a British player on the third row there? That's sort of very unusual. His name's not Andy Murray, but he's a really good clay court player and should win a few rounds at least.
Yeah, he's 66-1. As the tournament progresses in the trading department, do you get the patriotic pound going on him as he gets further through? Do you get people siding with him because he's British? Or?
Certainly not yet, but I think if it's on, it's obviously on British TV, so I'm sure that his first round match will be on and the papers will start getting behind him. And it doesn't take much to get the role going. I mean, we saw that Andy Murray at Wimbledon when he first started. It doesn't, you know, it's the momentum grows quickly.
Yeah,
we do see a bit of it in play as well, especially if they get on top. And you know, the commentators, obviously we've got British commentators on the British TV, and they'll talk so much about Edmund and the women's draw as well, about Watson and Konta, that you get the viewers get convinced that they are going to do something and they're going to do well. So you
I think
do see a bit
disappointed by Watson and Konta, though, unfortunately.
No, yeah, absolutely. But we do see a little bit in play for Kyle Edmund, but as Drew says, he seems to be becoming quite a consistent, like, big-time performer. He's done quite well. He even did well in the US Open when his ranking was, like, 100 and odd. So he turns up for the big occasions, and I quite like the way that he goes out on court and he does, like, hit that forehand without fear, and that's what you need to do at Roland Garros if you're going to get through some of these good clay court players. So I'll definitely be looking at him for a quarter bet. Is probably your best way to go about it because he's in Nadal's side of the draw.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Let's nail down some selections then to summarise for the men's side of things as well. Same principle again. If I give you two that you want to mention, you know, you can have one from the top end or one from the bigger prices or whatever you want to do. You can go first this time, Andy. We'll give you first crack at this, the men's one.
I am going to try and take Nadal on in the top half with Marin Cilic, just because he's become very consistent in the Grand Slams as of late. Fair enough, his game might not be the best suited to clay, and he does have to get past who I think is his biggest danger in his section, which is Kyle Edmund in the fourth round. But big serve, does hold serve quite well on clay. He holds serve 84% of the time. His break numbers aren't great, but if he can maybe grind something out against Nadal in tie breaks, so if Nadal breaks down, you never know, like, he might get an injury, some massive shock might happen earlier in the tournament, and all of a sudden that all those prices will massively change, because obviously Nadal's taken so much out of the market on that side.
That is a big point, isn't it, as well? If you do side with somebody from that side of the draw and there is the shock that Nadal goes out, you're on a price that's double what it should be then, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah. So that 40-1 on Marin Cilic, he'd become favourite on that side of the draw. Like, his quarter price is only about 3-1.
Yeah.
So take Nadal out of it and he becomes a massive value. But if you want to get the each way part of it, so taking someone from the bottom half of the draw, if you do think Nadal's is a nailed on certainty, I get the feeling that Drew's going to go with Djokovic. But I, even though I just called him an idiot, I'm going to try and win his favour back. Dominic, if you're listening, I know you are because I called you out earlier. I'm going to go with you for playing Nadal in the final. At 10-1, I think he's the second best clay court player in the tournament, as I said earlier, and hopefully he won't be too upset that I called him an idiot earlier on.
So, he's going to go out there to prove
you wrong.
Yeah, Drew,
Andy was correct. Yeah, I do probably more from sentimental reasons. I want Djokovic to come back to his best. I want him to play Nadal in the final. That's what I want. You know, it may not be the sort of the most analytical selection, but I think Nadal will just absolutely hose through the top half, and I would love to see a Nadal Djokovic final. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah. Any bigger prices that you want to chuck in the mix as well, or are you just pinning all your hopes on the dream final?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, looking at some players I'd like to oppose, some of the seeds I'd love to oppose. I think Schwartzman will go through a few rounds in the top half. I think Jack Sock's a defeat waiting to happen in the first round against Jürgen Zopp.
I've got that. I've got that written down right here. Zopp.
You know, he's the players know that he struggles over five sets, allegedly through lack of fitness, so keep him out there as long as you can.
He hates the clay as well, doesn't he? I'm sure he's on record as saying.
I do like Kyle Edmund. I like Djokovic. And the first round, if it happens, I've heard rumours that Nick Kyrgios may pull out, but Kyrgios against Tomic is absolute. I'd love to watch that match on telly. They absolutely detest each other.
When that when Tomic went through qualifying and he got drawn against the qualifier, you knew it was written in the stars he was going to be playing.
So that's a match I'd love to watch. Yeah.
Can I flag up a man who infuriates me like no other in tennis, and it's not Dominic Thiem. Philippe Kohlschreiber, 250-1 we've got him at. That's because he's never going to win. He's never been past like the fourth round of a Grand Slam, but his clay court numbers are absolutely brilliant. Like, for someone who's so low down the draw, he's actually won, if you ranked all the players and the percentage points that they've won on clay in the last 12 months, he's sixth.
He's beaten Djokovic here, so there's no reason why he can't.
Yeah.
So he's got a very tough first round against Borna Koric, but you know, the winner of that match should go through a few more rounds.
Yeah, I had the winner of that match making it really, really far to play Nadal in the quarterfinals. So whoever comes out of that match, have a look at them. And again, if Rafa breaks down, that 250-1 on Kohlschreiber, although I think he's just mentally weak, isn't he? When he gets to the big,
he's got all the skills. He plays very much like Federer, but he seems to break down
poor
at some point.
Roger Federer. Can I just flag up another first round?
Yep.
Are we going to move on to first rounds?
If you've got any quick first round fancies, that would be
time. I fancied Dennis Kudla to win his first round match. He's the outsider against Demi Zummer, just because Demi Zummer has been absolutely atrocious this year. He's got himself a high seed. He's got himself seeded on his form last year. Dennis Kudla came through qualifying. So he's already played three matches recently, and obviously got through those. I just don't think Demi Zummer's got it in his head at the moment to win a tennis match at a Grand Slam over five sets. So Dennis Kudla is a strong selection for me in the first round.
Any strong fancies first round yourself?
I think in the women's side of things, I think Siniakova will give Azarenka a hard game. I do like, on the women's side of things, looking for the outsider who's perhaps, like Ostapenko last year, going to perform better than I do like the potential in the players to come through. Maybe next year they'll never be this big a price again.
Yeah.
And I do think Jurgen Zopp will beat Jack Sock in the first round.
Okay.
But I hope everybody's a good team.
Yeah, I will echo those sentiments. So thank you very much, fellas. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you. Best of luck with your bets there and your trading throughout the tournament there, and we might be able to catch up with you later on as well, see how we're going later on in the tournament.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thanks very much.
There you go. That's the thoughts then of two of our traders, Andrew Watson and Drew Young. Thank you very much for joining us and having a look ahead to the tennis coming up in France there, and enjoy the tournament, and very best of luck with your bets.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.